It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were guys, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out.
Welcome into the show. A Friday edition. Coming off what happened in the previous show, I'm trying to reorientate myself. I mean, we can call it a holiday show if you were listening from 7 to 10. I don't know if I would classify it as that. Just, I would just say off the rails. So I don't know if I'm going to get back on track. But I think the Astros are something that can orient me as we get going. Obviously, Sean's here with me. And this is a show who has openly discussed not paying that much attention as far as the ins and outs of every game and every decision. But, I mean, if we're going to talk about the Astros and maybe why they won't achieve what they've achieved in the past, I mean, it's small sample theater and it's a one-game sample. But what happened yesterday would be a confirmation if anyone had concerns about what they could be. You have shoddy starting pitching. You have your middle relief, which in this case included Ryan Pressly, not get the job done. And I mean, and your offense found a way to go quiet and you lost another home game. If we're talking about potential negatives coming into the season, they all kind of played out. And also you throw in a manager who's never done it before. And he made a decision that you can question. I'm not going to do much of it, particularly because it's game one. But if you don't think John Singleton should be on the roster and you don't understand why he would get an important at bat, particularly because the guy he's replacing hit a home run, you got all that. You got everything you could want if you were concerned about what this Astros team to be. They lose to the Yankees 5-4 after being up 4-0. Fromber, even before he gave up runs, was shaky. Got out of a couple jams with double plays, and, you know, he's a sinker ball pitcher, so that stuff happens. But he was never, outside of the first inning, really in control. And it's kind of a redux of what we saw last year. And he is, and Joe Espada talked about him before the game, was asked about Fromber and the expectations. Joe Espada said Fromber is here to help us win meaningful games. He's done in the past. We expect him to do it again. Opening day is meaningful ceremonially. It's not as far as the entirety of the season, but you wanted to get off to a good start. The offense provided that a cushion for him, and he promptly decided in the fourth inning that getting guys out wasn't what he was interested in. Walked a lot of guys. The entire staff walked a lot of guys. So the Astros go down to the Yankees. And, of course, the name Juan Soto is a thing again. I thought I was rid of him. I was hoping he would kind of drift off into obscurity, maybe whether it be the Padres or someone else, but now he's with the Yankees. And because he's with the Yankees, he's a guy who's going to garner a lot of attention. And his, well, if you want to call him a five-tool player, his five tools showed up yesterday, particularly gunning down Mauricio Dubon. We have sound from Dubon. We'll talk about it. And the decision to send him, which I didn't have an issue with. It just so happens you have that guy in right field, and he made a great play to kill a rally off as the Astros lose. If we are talking about this team, Sean, and they lose a game like that, and particularly with their current number one, we know Verlander, when he comes back, will be the one. Are we confident in Fromber Valdez? And I'm not using yesterday, because coming into the year, there are questions about him. Are we good with really Fromber and the rotation overall? Because you got Verlander older, coming off an injury. You've got, and your next two guys are guys that have questions to answer. Is this the least confident you've been in the last 4 or 5 years in the rotation?
Yeah, I think so. Part of that's because the last 4 or 5 years rotation, it was like absolutely nuts.
That's true.
It was like prime Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander, and Charlie Morton or Zach Greinke or some other absolute stud. So yeah, this is definitely the shakiest it's felt. I think a lot of that comes from the fact that the opening day starter, your number one guy, like you mentioned, at least for now, is Framber Valdez, who is not exactly the most ice cold, lockdown, you know, stop a rally kind of ace. He's a guy, it's actually kind of the opposite, where you worry about things getting out of control with him. And things got a little out of control yesterday.
And usually sometimes it comes out of nowhere because he's going along pretty good and then he'll walk a guy and then it doesn't end there. He'll give up a weak hit and that'll continue and then all of a sudden we're in trouble. You could see this one coming.
He got out of some, what, I think it was two? Did you say it was two?
I think two double plays that got him out of jam.
Like bases loaded or first and third double plays to end an inning. So, yeah, this, you know, it was a little bit like a horror movie where you can kind of see the villain slowly, the horror movie slasher slowly around the corner, like, it's looking kind of bad for this group of girls on spring break.
And
I don't know.
Then Framber tripped in the fifth inning and got stabbed.
Lost a shoe or something, and yeah.
Yeah, so I don't imagine anyone didn't feel it coming, but all your discomfort was confirmed. Like, Framber was Ryan Pressly, but just in a starter role. And not even discussing Ryan Pressly's outing yesterday, but Ryan Pressly consistently is a guy who you always feel he's been good, but never felt like he was a lockdown cinch, even though the numbers may say otherwise. Just watching him, the feel of it, you never felt like you had a guy who was untouchable. And you just compare the Hader performance yesterday to what Ryan Pressly gave you, and then you realize Joe Espada didn't even have a decision as far as who would close. Who are the Astros going to pick as their closer now that they have Hader? You saw yesterday why Espada was pretty clear that as long as Hader is available, he will be their ninth inning guy.
On a day where, like you mentioned, it felt like there's just a lot of things that went awry, a lot of the anxieties that we had kind of went the worst case scenario. Josh Hader's nails. Josh Hader was awesome. I don't know why he was pitching in that situation.
Yeah, because hopefully the Astros, if they're in a tight game, they're leading. He has a chance to close them out. So we'll see. He threw 13 pitches, so probably he's going to be available if he's needed. But yeah, you're like, this is money well spent.
Yes. Oh, so that's what it looks like.
That's what it feels like to have a guy come in and not be concerned at all. Strikes out the side, and 9 of his 13 pitches were strikes, and he was just really, really good. Unfortunately, it was him trying to keep the Astros in it as opposed to close out the game, and we'll get into why they didn't tie that game on the other side. So the Astros lose. We'll hear from Dubon. We will hear from others. So a disappointing beginning to the season, but as you all know, in fact, it was said, it's one of 162. Everyone said, I think I heard someone in one of the clips I was cleaning up, we got 161 more games to go. And that kind of centers you into reality and realize there's not a real reason to freak out. But I did just find it interesting that if you had a concern, all of those showed up in game one.
Joe Espada, hot seat.
He's already making decisions we can question. If you thought that stuff was going to end with Dusty, wrong. The coin boy stuff is back.
And if anything, it feels like he makes more decisions.
He
than
actually
Dusty.
Does.
It's like he's doing stuff out there. Like we always talk about, like managers, what they really do. You know, not necessarily the most. Of all the coaching positions in professional sports, is kind of the least important, and might still be. But Joe Espada is he's not a spectator.
No.
he's doing stuff. I like it.
There's a thing with in pro sports when new owners take over, they want to make their mark. Matt Ishbia is the latest example. He's trading for KD. He's making sure he gets Bradley Beal. He's doing things because he's a new owner. Joe Espada feels like he's got some of that energy right now. What's that? Jake Myers hit a home run. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put in John Singleton because I'm doing something. So we'll see if that continues. We talked about it this morning. He put in John Singleton when Dusty was ejected from a playoff game, and John Singleton, I think, walked. It eventually led to a rally where Altuve hit a home run. So maybe John Singleton is his guy inexplicably, but I know exactly. That noise is pretty much should be the response. No one likes that. It didn't play out. It didn't play out well yesterday, as John Singleton kind of does what John Singleton does. If he's not hitting a ball out of the park, there's not much going on there, and that didn't work out, and it led to an eventual Astros loss. So we saw some Martinez, we saw some Presley, we saw some Montero. None of it felt great, but then we saw some Hader, and that was better. So the only Astro pitcher you could feel good about yesterday, well, Scott too, he was good too. But Scott and Hader, 8-9, the guys who pitched in the 8th and 9th, good. The other guys, starting off with Fromber, not great. So they go down 5-4, and now they see the Yankees tonight. Christian Javier on the mound. Hopefully he can. He's another guy who needs to bounce back, and hopefully he does against the Yankee lineup. That it's not very scary, but the Astros have enough pitching concerns where they could be a problem throughout the rest of the series, and we'll see how that plays out. We got plenty to discuss. I was gonna have a real issue with Sean, because we ranked the Sweet 16 games yesterday, and he had like Iowa State, Illinois as his top, and that first 8 minutes were brutal. I was like, Sean, why? Why would you recommend this game? It got good. Good's probably strong. At least it was competitive.
It came down to the wire.
Yes,
Illinois did Illinois things.
They did enough to win, and Iowa State is out in the Sweet 16 again. Clemson is in the Elite Eight for the first time since, I think, 2004, Alabama, or maybe that was the Alabama stat. But either way, or the second time ever Alabama's in the Sweet Six, in the Elite Eight, I believe. So the traditional football schools will see each other. North Carolina out, and that's fine. North Carolina and Arizona out. And if you don't know, Caleb Love was a North Carolina player. He was on the team last year, was on their Final Four team a couple of years ago. And R.J. Davis, who is up for Player of the Year, is one of their current Carolina guards. Those two former backcourt mates combined for 0-17 from three. I've seen Caleb Love be that bad. That's why a lot of North Carolina people weren't concerned with him leaving. But R.J. Davis, I haven't seen him shoot that poorly. And those two combined to be bad enough, well, where you see Clemson and Alabama advance. So, and instead of a North Carolina-Arizona matchup in the Elite Eight, you get that wispy mustache from Alabama, the transfer. We'll talk about him a little bit later in the show. He was really good and helped Alabama get to the Elite Eight. We know the Cougs are playing tonight. They'll have Duke. Jamal Shedd talked about the challenge of facing Duke and what it means. We'll hear from him as well. We're just getting started on the show. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
I mean, it's baseball. It's a baseball play. You know, he sent me. If I would have been safe, I would have overturned the plane. There would have been, wow, what a great send. But, you know, it's, like I say, it's baseball. Baseball happens.
Baseball does happen. That's baseball. As I said before, I heard it's one of 162. We got 161 games to go. We're all in on the cliches very early on. And they generally pop out after you lose. You lean into them, and they're not wrong. It is a long season. It's just one of 162, so on and so forth. The Astros lose yesterday to the Yankees. It started great, ended very poorly, and that's Mauricio Dubon talking about the play where Kyle Tucker singled to right, and I wasn't sure they would send him, just considering who was in right field, but I'm not taking issue with Gary Pettis and the move. It just didn't work out, and Soto made a great throw, Dubon thrown out, the Astros going to lose. After they did have one more chance, Bregman grounded it into a fielder's choice to end the ball game. So three hits in the ninth inning do not score a run, and they go down 5-4. Christian Javier is the starter tonight. Let's see if he can get the Astros back, not to their winning ways at home, because they don't win games at home. But how about we win a game at home and see if we avoid the fate of last year's team, where it always felt like they were probably going to lose. because particularly in the playoffs, they did. Some Texans news. Another restructure on the offensive line. This time it's Tytus Howard getting a restructure. And, of course, all the Texans accounts are like, what's Nick got cooking? You know, maybe he just wants to carry over money until next year because that's allowed. Is he gonna trade for a receiver or not? But they're continuing to make moves to free up cap space, and Tytus Howard is the latest. And generally all that means is instead of paying him an actual salary, it transitions into a signing bonus that doesn't go against the cap. So the Texans free up money. Who could it be for, Sean? I know I can't think of a real available option unless they go after a corner, but they've decided they're just going to throw bodies at the position. Could it be for a guy like Brandon Ayuk, who's talked about wanting to get his and you know, fits the system? You always have to make those ties. I'm of the opinion that this is Nick Caserio just squirreling money away because, as I said, that money, you can push it off into next season and have even more cap space.
Yeah, that could be what it is that I put out there.
Oh, you did the Brian Windhorst thing.
I did the Brian Windhorst thing.
So you're one of the Texans accounts suggesting that there could be a move in play.
No, not really. It's more, you know, I know that's what the streets are thinking.
Okay.
So, you know.
You're a man who's got his ear to the streets.
Yeah, so I want to put it out there. No, I just think it's more fun to speculate than it is to be like, probably just going to roll it over. It's an accounting thing. It's like, no, give me some Photoshops of Brandon Ayuk. Give me some Photoshops of Stephon Diggs, I guess.
Ooh.
If we're going with the like
receivers.
Splashy, and just the idea that it could be a splashy move, it would.
Or T. Higgins.
It'd be T. Higgins.
If we're talking about a big move and a wide receiver, sure, there are guys available. The problem, all of those would require compensation. And so you've already traded out of the first round. You have an extra second this year and next. I really just say next. I wouldn't even consider this year extra because you actually traded a pick to get out of. But next year you have an extra second. Are you trading away a second and whatever for a guy like Higgins or Diggs and then paying them? Because it doesn't come with just acquiring them. We saw you only had to give up a seventh for Joe Mixon, and it still required you to give him more money. The wide receiver thing, if people have that in their sights, is one where it's costly on two ends. And if you're the Bills, who don't have a current number one wide receiver, even if you're sick of Stephon Diggs, you're going to want real compensation for him, because who else do you have to throw the ball to if you're Josh Allen right now? So, and obviously T. Higgins is asking for a lot of money, and the Bengals would say, hey, he's our number two. It'll cost you. And Brandon Ayuk is probably 1A if you consider Debo, or maybe 1B if you consider Debo the 1A. So the names we mentioned will cost you in multiple ways. I don't know if the Texans are a team that's going to trade premium picks for a wide receiver. They were in on the Keenan Allen, maybe. But Keenan Allen's an older player, and we saw what he went for. It's going to be a big number if they require one, and maybe that's why the speculation's out there. I don't really see it, but they do have money to make moves, and that's always good.
Yeah, and you know, I bemoan the, you know, it's actually a good value trade out of the first round, but can you at least give me some, you know, give me a couple weeks of, oh, what about this guy? What about this guy in the first round?
Yeah.
You know, at least Nick Caserio is paying us back with getting some cap space, so now we can go, oh, what about this guy? What about this guy? So, you know, that's all we have to look forward to.
What about this guy?
What about this guy? And then it's actually, no, it's going to be sound football roster building and management. And,
great.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Hooray. We can't get some tweets off about this. I need to get some radio segments off about
I need
this.
A little speculation. I don't need accounting moving numbers around. I can't talk about that for a segment.
He should be forced to come out and do a press conference and say, this is just for accounting reasons. Disregard.
Don't get your hopes up, everyone. Yeah. We're looking past this because we're gonna have to sign Nico to an extension, and maybe we don't do it this year, but we're going to need the cap space to to facilitate that deal. Don't you guys worry. We're gonna sign a receiver to big money. Just one of our own.
Yeah. Don't worry. Put down the Photoshop. You know. Don't worry about us. We'll stick our heads back up. What in 3 more weeks when we reveal the uniforms? Until then. How about those Rockets, huh?
Huh? Yeah.
That's how he ends the press conference.
How about those Rockets? 10 in a row, right? Trying to get to 11.
Exciting.
Yeah, and they play the Jazz tonight. I believe there's a question of whether Lauri Markkanen will play, which certainly helps. And the Jazz are in a mode where they've long past been trying to win games, at least this year. That's the second year in a row that the Jazz have actually played pretty well to start the year and then have decided, we're not interested in that anymore.
I do appreciate that both times they kind of have to, like, hit the parachute to, like...
Hey, we're too good.
Yeah, let's trade some of these guys.
Yeah, and if they played better, maybe they don't get Keontae George last year's draft, which they feel pretty good about, so it's not a bad plan. We saw the Mavericks do it much later, where this whole battling for the 10th seed thing, we're not very interested in it, so we're going to tank, and then they were able to draft Derek Lively, who's combined with Daniel Gafford's a pretty... who they acquired in the trade this season. It's been a pretty good center combination. So there is some value in deciding you're not interested in winning, and our very own Jeremy Branham thought the Rockets should try that as well when things were slipping away, and then this recent run of form has made him...
They did literally the opposite.
Yeah, all they did was win. All they've done since is really just win all their games. Yeah, they're like, we're not... We take that under advisement, Jeremy, but we're just going to win all our games.
Yeah.
And he's
How
fine.
How about we do this instead?
Yeah, and he's obviously, if they're going to win all their games, he's more than fine. And it should get to 11. The Jazz aren't good. Lauri Markkanen is questionable, but it is a road game, which until very recently the Rockets haven't been very good at. But if you go in there and beat OKC, you can go in there and beat anyone. And the Jazz are the very epitome of just anyone at this point. As far as a basketball team,
they are, yes, the Jazz are, they're just a decent NBA team. And that is like their role in the league. We're, you know, for most of this winning streak and this stretch in March, it's been, the Spurs, the Wizards, like just very unserious basketball teams that are really, really just playing. I mean, the Rockets from the last couple of years. That's what they are. The Jazz are a step ahead of that. They are right there with the Rockets. They're better than the Rockets for most of the year until the Rockets turned it on. Like we said, the Jazz turned it off. But they still have some players. They're just they're a good measuring stick of like this is what it looks like, and it's a decent NBA team. Same thing as the Thunder, even without Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. That's still a decent team to get some intel off of, to see how Jalen and how the rest of these guys can keep up their hot streak, and it's not a complete joke of a team.
What we're saying is if you play like you did against the Blazers in the first half, you're going to be down by double digits against this version of the Jazz.
You can't get away with that because they don't have a guy wearing number 7.
Yeah, they actually have it. Very true. Good callback.
Without even looking, they do not have a guy.
They have guys with numbers you would pick if you have the opportunity.
Yeah.
You would not be picking 72 as if you're a minor league option for the Astros during spring training.
He did not get assigned a number.
Yes.
All these players chose
their
numbers.
Yes. They weren't given them because that was all that was left. So that's who the Rockets see tonight. Try to get to 11 in a row. And speaking of the Rockets on the other side, we're going to hear from Draymond Green. He has responded. And the problem is, I should probably have just pulled the clip that was floating around Twitter, which was very inflammatory. I wouldn't even consider it. He actually made the points we made before his podcast went live. A lot of Rocket fans were upset because Draymond was criticizing Tari Eason's availability and then they called out Draymond. You put a strain on your guys because you're not around. But Draymond actually was complimentary of Tari Eason throughout the clip that we're going to play on the other side. In fact, I was looking through, you type in on Twitter, Tari Eason and Draymond. And he's talked about Tari in the past and likes his game. So I don't think there's anything real as far as beef there, I guess, if you want to call it that. But Draymond did have some observations about Tari Eason's Warriors call out. Maybe we'll play both so you know what we're talking about. We'll do that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back. I'm in the middle of uploading the John Lance podcast, so if anyone's listening and wondering where that is, no intern today, so I'm doing double duty. It'll be up within the hour. Don't you worry if you guys are wondering where that is. So when we left, at least in the last segment, we ended it discussing Tar Eason and Draymond Green and what Tar Eason said after the Rockets had that great win on Wednesday night against the Thunder. They go in there without Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. At least they were facing the Thunder without Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And they won. Game that went into overtime. Last second shot by the Thunder sent that game in overtime. Jalen Williams made a three. The Rockets didn't care. They responded and eventually closed that game out thanks to Jalen Green and being good from three in the overtime period. So they win 10 in a row. Now they go to Utah to try to get number 11. And obviously Tar Eason was supposed to be a big part of this team, and he's not the only one missing time. We know Şengün out, Cam Whitmore out, but Tari's been at least the most vocal on social media. You know, Şengün will tweet about great win stuff, but Tari took it to a different level when he mentioned the Warriors by name and really just a call out from an old movie. And by old, I mean it came out in 1979. And of course, Draymond Green, who loves to talk and has his own podcast to do things like that, responded. So if you missed it, this is Tar Eason on Wednesday night after the game celebrating a Rockets win.
Warriors, come out to play! Warriors, come out to play! Yeah, it's like that.
I've never seen the Warriors. I know of the reference. I get that reference, as Captain America would say. But I've never seen the movie, but I've seen the YouTube clip of that. So that's what the question is. Tar Eason, seen Warriors. It came out how many years before he was born?
I don't think he saw Warriors.
So he just probably has seen the clip someplace.
Because the Warriors play it in their arena.
Oh, so maybe he's heard it. Maybe that's where it is. You're
probably
right.
Looked up.
It may not be a question of him watching the movies. He might have just heard it.
They do this every you know, the five times he's played in Golden State in his career. Every time they play it.
Okay, so
that's at least what I assume, because I, like him, have never seen this movie.
No.
I just know the clip.
Yes, so who's going back to watch that movie from 1979? I'm going to doubt Tar Eason knows it, but I think your particular insight is dead on, at least if we're going to speculate. He's heard that clip in that building, and that's where he got it from, and maybe he did some research after that. So he does that, and of course, it goes viral. It reaches a certain Warrior, and you know Rocket fans love it because there's a history there. And Draymond references the history in his clip and questions Tar Eason doing it.
Why would he come out and make a video telling the Warriors to come out and play? Everybody in Houston had a heart attack when he did that. When you lose to a team in the playoffs when it matters the most, and like especially at the height of like, you know, with them Doves with like the height. When you lose, like, it's tough to talk because that's what matters. And so when you start talking, everybody just look back like, bro, you can't talk to them because of that. And so shout out to the young fella, you know, coming out, talking about Warriors, come out and play. A part of the reason that I like Tar Eason is that he would come out and do that. Like, that's when I saw it, I wasn't surprised at all. I am a little surprised that he hasn't played in the game since January 1st. It's kind of tough to come out yelling, come out and play, and you're not going to play. Like, you can't get out there and help them. But I respect it. You know, on the trails of the play-in, it's a big moment for the franchise, so I get it.
I feel like that last sentence is a little hate. Because you know how we heard Draymond talk about, I don't give a damn about the Rockets. The whole on the trails of the play-in thing feels like hate. Like, oh, look at you guys. Look at that little team, all excited about possibly making the play-in. Draymond, you're not tricking me. That's a little hate. But the other stuff, as I mentioned before we went to break, he's talked about Tari in a very positive way when asked about him. So I don't think he minds it so much, but because he has a podcast, he has to create content. Of course, he's going to talk about it. And as I mentioned, what the back half of the clip, the one where he talks about, you're not even available to help, is what Rocket fans latch onto. If you look, if you listen to the entirety of the thing, it's not that inflammatory. It's what we were talking about yesterday. Like, wait a minute. Calling out the Warriors and you're not even playing. The other thing from the first part, Draymond, no one had a heart attack. You aren't those guys anymore. Sure, Steph Curry, we have some concerns with because he's Steph, but no one is like, oh my God, it's the Warriors he's talking about. Relax. You're not that team anymore. In fact, the reason he was able to do it is because no one's afraid of you.
Yeah. Like he said at the end, this is for a play-in spot.
Yeah.
Like,
consider, we're not- yeah. By the way, you took that shot. Guess what? You're right there, too.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
barely hanging
you're
on.
One game ahead.
Yeah, you're barely hanging on to that spot.
Yeah, so, yeah, I don't think anyone should or did have a heart attack when he called out the Warriors.
Yeah, no.
That are starting Brandon Pajimski at shooting guard because Klay Thompson's too washed to start now.
Well, let's give Klay some credit. I don't know if Pajimski has a minute restriction, but the last couple games, Klay has started. So
okay.
I think they've given
he got his spot back?
Yeah, he took his spot back from a rookie. So Klay's back in the starting lineup, at least the last couple games. So, yeah.
Does Wiggins show up anymore?
It depends. Depends on the night, really, okay. At this point. He had been out for a while for a personal reason. Now he's back, too. So no one had a heart attack, Draymond. No one did. No one's that concerned with you guys anymore.
You're not that guy, pal, anymore.
No.
You're not that guy.
You're not that team, and you're not that guy. I think the Warriors would just hope that you're available for the Rockets game. Let's reach that goal before we start talking about how scary you are. But Draymond responds as you might expect, and because the Rockets keep on winning, that game holds importance now. As I said, they got the Jazz tonight. That's the game they should win, but the Jazz aren't the trailblazers, so a better effort is needed. And in fact, if you play like you did against OKC, you probably win that game very comfortably, and a lot of that has to do with the shooting of Jalen Green, who was really good in OKC. So Rockets in the news. Can get to 11 in a row, and they'll be playing at the same time as the Cougars. The Cougars are a team who has big aspirations. They lost last year at this spot in a Sweet 16 game against an ACC team. Let's hope they don't repeat that again, Let's hope they don't do that. Jamal Shedd talked about that. We'll hear from him when we come back. Jamal Shedd talked about more playing Duke and what it might mean as far as, you know, the media is going to ask people about Duke and the name. And Jamal Shedd addressed it and said something I think was very dead on about playing Duke and this particular Duke team. We'll hear from him on the other side. We got some other stuff to get to as well. I am going to call out Sean about his recommendation about Illinois and Iowa State. What a terrible first 30 minutes of basketball. To be honest, it was awful the entire game, and maybe that's just a thing about college basketball, but
that's the thing about college basketball. It's always terrible.
It was so bad. How many open shots were missed?
Yeah, you know what that sounds like? Arizona.
Oh, well, Caleb Love had
a great... You know, that sounds like UNC. All these games,
yeah,
they're
all like that. But
shots.
Yeah, but that's the one you recommended. And I
said because of the clash of style. Okay.
Well, they both look like the same bad offense. And so we'll talk some college basketball on the other side, and particularly the Cougars as they get ready for Duke. We'll be back.
ESPN. 97.5.
You're listening to The Dale Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Dale. Dell, no, that's okay. That's on me. I went more country with it. My bad, Dell.
That's the voice of Michael Carroll. That's the most you'll hear from him today. He's busy. He's got a lot of things to do other than join us to talk about movies and pop culture. So we'll hear from Michael next week. You know, he does all the imaging here. You hear something on the station, whether it be a remote, sound for a remote, or just even commercial. That's all Michael. So he's a little busy. He's done us a great favor the last couple weeks, but it won't be today. So we'll hear from him next Friday. A guy we'll see tonight is Jamal Shedd. the best player on the Cougars, up for the Naismith Award as the best player in college basketball. He's their leader. He's their most important player. And he's the one people want to go to get answers other than Kelvin Sampson. So Jamal Shedd, in the lead up to the game, a lot of the talk has been about playing Duke. The name itself carries more weight for some people than others. I don't particularly think about Duke in the way others do, mostly because you've watched them over the last 5 or 6 years. They're no longer that team that you should fear. They're a good basketball team. They're certainly a good program, but they're not one of the best. I don't know if they're an elite program by play anymore. Certainly the name will get you excited. But the Cougars have been a better program the last 4 or 5 years. Not that Duke has fallen off completely, but the transition from K to Shire has been fine. But no one should fear Duke. They are a good ACC team right now. They're not, at least in my eyes, a team who should always be considered a clear national title favorite. And I'm sure that'll change. They got Cooper Flagg coming in, and he'll only be there for the year. But he's going to be one of the best players in the country and a likely top overall pick. But that's for next year. He won't be on the floor tonight. So Jamal Shedd was asked about playing Duke. And like I said before we went to break, I think he was dead on in his comments.
Prepare just like any other game. They're a great program. They're known for great things, as they should be. They've won a lot. And they have good players today, or they wouldn't be in this position to play against us. So, but I think we go in and we try to prepare like we normally do, and just play the people in front of us and not the name.
And that's all you can do. I mean, there isn't it's not Zion or R.J. Barrett, and these are just the more recent vintage. They're not the legends of the past. It's the Kyle Filipowskis of the world that you're going to see. And as I was slandering Duke, I'll give them some credit. They've been good. I mean, round of 32 for Shire last year, and you maybe expect that in year one. Final four for Coach K in his final year. They missed the tournament the year before, so they've had some issues. But before then, a couple Elite Eights, so they've been a good program. But I wouldn't take them over the Cougs, and the Cougs are going to operate that way. And we will stick with our analysis of the game. The whistle, how will they be officiated, and foul trouble. But the biggest thing for me is the Cougs got to protect the defensive board. That's been something that's been an issue. A&M got opportunity after opportunity because the Cougs weren't able to secure defensive rebounds, and that leads to more possessions, more time playing defense, and that leads to fouls. So if you can limit the number of opportunities the other team has to put pressure on you on that end of the floor, it helps you in the foul game. I hope what we saw on last Sunday isn't the trend going forward, because they've had some issues in the regular season and in the Big 12 tournament being able to protect the board. So you need Francis and others to stay out of foul trouble and protect their defensive board, and I think they win this game. The line is fair, but I think the Cougs win this one. I won't say going away, but I do think they are in control. And as long as what happened against A&M late doesn't happen again, I think it's a fairly comfortable win, because we forget that was 81-69 with like 90 seconds to go, and all of a sudden all hell broke loose.
Yeah, they're up 12 with 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
That was the crazy stat that I was like, what? I watched the game. How the hell is that possible that they came back from that? But yeah, like you said, I think that the Cougs should get this done. But there are, I mean, obviously it's a 1-4 matchup. Like we saw last night, what, 2 2-seeds and a 1-seed lost? So anything can still happen. There are some areas of concern, but overall, this Cougs team, I feel like, should, if they're allowed to out-physical Duke, they will out-physical Duke and get the win.
Yeah, we'll see where the shooting lies. That's another thing. If Emmanuel Sharpe can have another big game, and maybe we get something from LJ Cryer that we didn't get against A&M. So there are a couple ways where this can go poorly beyond our analysis of being able to play physical. Like, shooting the ball is a very obvious thing, but we know the Cougs have issues in a dry spell, even if they're playing well defensively, could lead to, like, the Cougs could give up an 8-0, like a 10-0 run over the course of 4.5 minutes just because they don't make any shots and Duke actually makes some. I hope that is the case, and I think they avoid a long dry spell from the floor. and secure the defensive boards. I think they win this game. They've been a team who when they're locked in defensively can be a team that you almost can't score against. That's the way they play. They make it very difficult just to run your stuff. We talk about physicality, even off the ball. They make it very difficult for you to run your stuff. They're going to reach, and that can lead to fouls. They don't. That's part of when you don't give up layups. When that's part of the agenda. No free buckets. No free layups. You're going to reach. You're going to try. You're going to scramble, and that can lead to foul trouble, depending on how the game is called. But that game is the second game in that region. NC State versus Marquette is the first one of the night. You got Gonzaga versus Purdue and Creighton versus Tennessee. So the one outlier is NC State. They're the 11th seed. Everyone else is a 5 or above. So if we are talking about the best teams in the country playing, we've gotten that so far. But as Sean alluded to, the top being a top seed at this point doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
Clemson is 6-1. San Diego State got their doors blown off because everyone does against UConn. The stat over their last, 9 tournament games for UConn, no one's come closer than 13 points. That's how dominant they've been in last tournament and the first 3 games of this tournament.
That honestly feels like too low. You could have told me no one's come in between like 23 points.
Yep. You look at a 30-point win over the national finalist last year. Now, clearly, different teams, different years, but San Diego State was a team. They didn't push them because no one really pushed UConn, but it wasn't this. It wasn't what it was last night. Like, UConn was up 37-31. They ran a nice play to get an open shot to go up 40-31 before the half, and it was over. Like, San Diego State was in the game for the first 20 minutes right before that shot went through, and then they didn't compete in the second half, and UConn was running away, which makes it even funnier that Dan Hurley's complaining about the draw and where they're playing.
He's literally never going to have to, like, worry about crunch time.
Yeah.
And the committee made it as hard as they could for us.
In 9 games, he hasn't had to worry about clutch minutes if we're transitioning from the NBA to college basketball. No clutch minutes for him in 9 tournament games. What's he talking about? Like, you just credit UConn and him for what he's done, because that program was in flux and he got there and they have been a power. We talk about teams who what the name means and the legendary status of a program. UConn, we know Kevin Ollie got one, but UConn had fallen off under Jim Calhoun. Okay, but they weren't the team that they were.
Even the one that Kevin Ollie got, they were not. That was not a good team.
No, they weren't. Not in the
regular
season.
Both of the last two championships that they won, they weren't good teams.
Yeah, Kimball Walker went on a run.
Yeah, they were heroic efforts. And then, I mean, to make the tournament, UConn had to win 5 straight games at Madison Square Garden in the Big East tournament to make the tournament. Like, that means they were, like, the 8th best team in the Big East that year.
Yeah, they weren't good. Kimball went on a run, and it led all the way, I believe, to here. Right? Was the Shabazz Napier team the one that won it here? Or was it the Kimba team?
Good question. I think Kimba.
Because we know the game wasn't good. And that Final Four was awful. It was talk about Illinois and Iowa State being awful basketball. Connecticut was part of 2 terrible and an overall terrible Final Four as far as entertainment value. But
the 2011, okay. Which was Kemba Walker.
Okay. That was a awful, awful tournament as far as the last couple games. And I went to the semifinal day and I was like, ugh. Not doing that. I'm not coming back on Monday. I'm going to stay home and watch it.
No, thanks.
Yeah. I know this is going to decide a title, but I can do that from home. We're good. UConn, a much different animal now. Now, and they have been all year, really, the odds-on favorite to win it again. And they're the one seed who survived yesterday. North Carolina wasn't. Caleb Love plays for Arizona, but his, like I said earlier, his backcourt mate from last year, R.J. Davis, was like, you know what? I'm going to pull a Caleb Love. I'm going to not make a shot from 3. They combine in their respective games to go 0-17, so they don't see each other. The 1 versus 2 in that region do not see each other. It'll be Clemson versus Alabama, just like we all want it. And save your football school stuff, because everyone else has made those jokes. Not you. Sean. I'm just talking to the general public who might be listening.
No.
That wasn't directed at
it
you.
It did get to the point where I'm like, hey, is anyone going to mention that they played in the national championship game like 3 straight years or whatever it was in football? Literally everyone made that joke. It was insane to watch in real time.
And you imagine the people making those jokes, their For You page is filled with other people making the jokes. So at what point do you think, maybe I don't do it because everyone else has done it. Let's get the joke off.
Yeah.
The non-creative joke, because if everyone's thinking it, it's not that creative.
By the way, I just looked up the I still have up the 2011 Final Four.
Yeah.
UConn won their Final Four game against Kentucky 56-55, and then they won the final 53-41.
I told you it was bad. I told you. That was the Houston one.
That was in Houston.
Told you it was terrible.
That's insane reading that. 41 points, and you only lose by 12?
In a finals game. Not a finals game. Excuse me, the final game, the national title game, and that's what happens.
Ugh.
To be fair, it's not like San Diego State lit the world on fire in their game against UConn last year either.
At least UConn did.
True. I mean, San Diego State's has been a good defensive team for years now, and they made it difficult on UConn, but UConn was never really challenged. As we said, no clutch minutes in 9 tournament games. We'll see what happens tomorrow. But the Cougs play tonight. And to be honest with you, let's hope for non-clutch minutes with the Cougs. Let's have an easy one. We were on the way to that against A&M, and then it all hell broke loose. Let's avoid hell breaking loose tonight. Win the game. Save your roster. Rest. No injuries, obviously. And so you're at full strength for either be Marquette, which is most likely, and hopefully maybe it's NC State. I say that, but NC State's the hottest team in the country. We talk about 5 games in 5 days. They did it in the ACC tournament to make it. Let's hope there isn't a Kimba Walker-type run in store for NC State, because that would mean they'd have to go through the Cougs, and who's looking for that? We'll wrap up Hour 1 with that. We got more to discuss when we come back. We'll revive the Astros stuff. I mean, game one loss, whatever, not a big deal. But as we've talked about, if you have any concerns about this team going forward, some of those concerns were highlighted yesterday, and we'll get back into that. But first, if you want to bet on the Astros tonight, and you have a good feel about what Christian Javier is capable of against that Yankees lineup, where you go? You go to MyBookie. Now it's tournament time, so certainly MyBookie has you covered there. But you can bet on Astros baseball. You can bet on the NBA if you think the Rockets are gonna go into Utah and win. Maybe you have a line on how many points Jalen Green's gonna score. MyBookie has you covered in all ways, so because they have up to the minute odds, props, and also expert predictions to help you decide where to put your money on. Just use the promo code BET975. So if you put in $200, you get $300 ready to play instantly with that promo code. Sign up now and take advantage of a generous welcome bonus on your first deposit all the way up to $1,000. You know this. MyBookie is a one-stop shop for all your sports betting and casino needs, complete with a real-life Vegas experience right from the comfort of your home. The best part about MyBookie, you should know this by now, you can bet on anything, anytime, from anywhere. Just go to mybookie.ag. Remember, use the promo code BET975 to secure your welcome bonus today, only with MyBookie.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.